Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
This is the Graceful Atheist Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. I want to thank my latest reviewer on the Apple Podcast Store, Sandy MK5. Thank you so much for the kind words. You can rate and review the podcast on the Apple Podcast Store. You can rate the podcast on Spotify. And please subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening. This is another episode that features the Deconversion Anonymous community online on Facebook. If you want to participate, you can find that at facebook.com/groups/deconversion. Special thanks to Mike T for editing today's show. On to today's show. My returning guest today is Jack Robertson. Jack told his deconversion story many months ago that you can find that in the back catalog, and today he is going to talk about his daughter Emily's story as it pertains to an accident that she had. So we have another content warning this week. This episode is not for the squeamish. Jack describes in fairly graphic detail the wounds due to fire, the surgery process, PTSD trauma because of the accident, parental trauma, watching one's child go through suffering, and to just add the cherry on top, a bit of religious trauma as well. There is also a bit of gallows humor. Emily, Jack, and their family have a great sense of humor, and humor is a part of their recovery process. But again, if you find that offensive, this may not be the episode for you. We're going to hear Emily's story. Emily gave her dad, Jack, permission to tell the story. So I want to begin by saying thank you so much to Emily. This is really her story. It is, I will acknowledge, a little odd to have Jack telling it, but Emily is still in recovery, and there are still some important elements of the story to tell. One of the aspects that Jack brings up is the theoretically well-meaning but ultimately abusive ways that Christian has spoke to Emily and her parents. The lack of empathy and the lack of acknowledgement of the suffering that Emily and her family went through, as you are going to hear, was fairly profound. Here is Jack to tell Emily's story. Jack, welcome back to the Graceful Atheist Podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on again. I know that this is going to be slightly different than your normal episode. So thank you.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we're really trying to do is foster community for the deconstruction, deconversion community. And what we have on our Facebook group, the Deconversion Anonymous community, what I've really seen is incredible empathy from members to each other. Right. And one of those things that I saw is the story you're about to tell, that your daughter had an accident and your experience with that. And I'll just add here, what a beautiful thing it was to see those community members come around you and say, you know, I love you, we're pulling for you, you know, we're thinking for about you, and just a place for you to be able to vent as well some of your frustration.
Yeah, it was definitely that. And the Facebook group was amazingly supportive like next level supportive. I cannot say that enough. It was an incredible amount of support, which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's so awesome. And we'll, again, as always, just plug that, you know, Arlene is our community manager. And a lot of the reason that it's so beautiful in there is because of the work that she does, making sure that everyone gets an opportunity to be heard and things are running smoothly there. So thank you to Arlene.
Yes, yes, for sure. She's an excellent, excellent person. So
Yeah. We're going to put that on her title now. Excellent person.
We need to sell that as merch.
That's right. Exactly. So I've hinted at it, but Jack, let's go ahead and you know, tell us what happened and some of your experience.
Okay. So I'm going to do what I normally don't do. I force myself to remember, and I usually bury the lead. So I'm going to start with, my daughter is fine and she's going to be okay. She just has an incredibly long healing journey ahead of her. So I need to start with that. And also to sort of tell the story, I got to sort of start with what happened. So February 24th, my wife's birthday, I was a loving husband and scheduled recording my podcast on that night instead of taking her to eat.
I'm sure that went over really well, Jack.
Yes. And so I can hear her talking on the phone, and I just sort of thought, oh, cool, the kids are calling her for her birthday, because my son and my daughter live in Colorado Springs, because my son was in the Air Force station there. My daughter loved it there, so she moved up there, and they live together. And so I was like, yay, they're calling her. They didn't forget, because, you know, 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
So I finish, I go out there, and the look on my wife's face is not a good look. So I'm like, what's happened? And she's like, Emily's in the emergency room. Well, Emily, my youngest daughter, is a severe asthmatic. Like, she was literally born having an asthma attack. I am not making that up. So I thought immediately, oh, she just had another asthma attack. And then she turns to me and she says, Emily was on fire. Well, when you hear that, your heart just sinks.
Right.
And then also, I have an extremely vivid imagination, and I grew up in the 80s and 90s watching action movies. So in my mind, the vision of her on fire is 80s action movie, someone running, being on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was not a good thing to have when it's your kid.
Right.
And so I, you know, ask what parts of her body, because I have, you know, no idea at this point. And she ended up with burns on her right arm, her right leg. Her face was sunburned, and her left leg had a few burns as well.
Okay.
And so I'm going to kind of explain what happened and how she got the burns.
Okay.
Emily is incredibly crafty. She's been that way her whole life. One of my favorite things about Emily is she's herself. She doesn't, you know, the expression dances to the beat of a different drummer. Yeah. Emily's in a different instrument section altogether.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
I love that about her.
Yeah.
And I love that she doesn't care that people, you know, think about her being herself. I love that.
Yeah.
So she's making candles and she's, you know, doing it on the stove. It's even an electric stove. And she puts the scent oil in the wax. And as soon as she did that, the wax caught fire.
Mm. Oh, wow.
The wax was probably at the smoking point, and then it was probably bad oil that she put in there. So it was just a weird combination. And then Emily did the smart thing. She immediately thought to herself, this is like a grease fire. I can't pour water on it. I have to snuff it out with the lid of the pot. Mm-hmm. So that's what she did. She said black smoke was coming out. And her next thought was, I'm just going to go throw this in the snow, because it had snowed that day. And she's like, okay, fire will go out. She's like, what better to put a fire out than snow?
Yeah.
So she picks it up by the handle. She turns around, and then the pot of wax erupts like a school science fair volcano.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So the fire shoots out, lands on her arm. That's where the fire on her arm starts. And then she did what anyone would do. She drops the pan.
Yeah.
And when she did, the hot wax got on her thigh, but it was also on fire. So then her thigh was on fire.
Man.
Yeah. Fortunately, the pan landed bottom side down on the kitchen. So the fire was self-contained in the pot other than her. And then she also did, any fireman listening to this, your training in elementary school with her worked because she immediately stopped, dropped, and rolled in the kitchen.
Okay.
Unfortunately, apparently kitchen tile does not put fire out.
All right.
So she got up, ran outside, and dove in the snow.
Okay.
Which, you know, was a smart
move. Yeah, yeah. What else are you going to do? Right.
Yeah. And so she stayed there. You know, the fire goes out and she was about to pass out. And my daughter's dog, Ellie, we joke, we're not sure who's emotional support animal. She's about to pass out. And then Ellie was licking her on the face. Mm-hmm. So that kept her from passing out.
Okay.
And she got up. She goes inside because she's like, I have to call an ambulance.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I should have mentioned this earlier. Their cousin lived with them also. And the house is a split level house. So the boys have the downstairs part of the house. And the upstairs is Emily's part of the house.
Okay.
And even though she's the youngest, she is the one that runs that house. It is like a house mother for in college. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so she comes in. Well, my nephew had heard her yelling and he runs upstairs and he gets into the kitchen and he sees her. Well, he sees the aftermath of somebody that had been on fire, which isn't a pretty sight. And he sort of froze. And this is not negative because I would have froze. You know what I mean? Everybody would in that attitude, you're freaked out over it. But I actually think that helped Emily out because it pissed her off that he was just standing there. And are F-bombs okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can express yourself.
Because I have to quote her.
Yeah.
So she turns to Peyton, my nephew, and she says, well, one of us has to call the fucking fire department. So she walks over to her phone and dials 911.
Yeah.
You know, explains what happened. And then she said that after like 2 minutes of talking to the 911 operator, she's like, I just couldn't talk to him anymore. So I hung up on him.
Yeah.
And she turns to my nephew and says, you go stand outside at the door. And when the fire department gets here, you open the door.
Yeah.
And then she stuck a chair at the top of the stairs. And she just had this weird thought of, if I put my hand above my head, maybe there'll be less blood flow and it might help it. I don't know if it did or not. Mm-hmm. But that was what she did. So when the fireman comes into the house, he sees her shaking uncontrollably in the chair with her arm raised above her head.
Okay.
And skin melting off of her arm. Oof. I know that's a little gross, but it's part of the story. And then he turned and he yelled to the fire truck, we are going to need ketamine immediately. Well, if you know anything about pain medication, if they're starting you off with ketamine, they have just skipped everything else because that's like 10 times of morphine.
Okay.
Yeah. So they take her to the ER there in Colorado Springs. And because she is 22 years old, she thought, well, they're just going to wrap my arm and then send me home.
Yeah.
And so she says that to the nurse, and the nurse looks at her and she's like, oh, honey, we're trying to decide if we're going to metaflight you to Denver go to the burn unit. And I just find that funny because that is clearly the thoughts of, you know, someone who's 22 that, oh, they're just going to send me home.
Right.
And so she ends up and, you know, they get her to the burn unit there in Denver. And my wife and I, of course, on our end here in Oklahoma, are freaking out about, you know, we have to figure out taking off work now. We have to figure out someone to watch the dogs. We got to figure out how we're going to, you know, get there. So we're working on all of these things. Mm-hmm. And my wife decided that she really needed her mother to go, because she knew that there were going to be times that she needed her mom.
Right.
You know, to
right.
be a mom.
Yeah, yeah.
And on top of that, my wife's mother is the only grandparent, biological grandparent, that my kids have left.
Okay.
My stepmom is still alive, and she's their grandma too, but I just met biologically. So we drive to Colorado. My oldest daughter's mother-in-law, though, did use frequent flyer miles, so she could fly there that day. We couldn't get there till Sunday, but my oldest kid was there with her on Friday and Saturday.
Okay.
So she wasn't alone, and then we were there. So then that Monday, she had skin graft surgery. Mm. Oh, my gosh. It is heart-wrenching to see someone you love go through that amount of pain. She was on a cycle of, they would give her the ketamine. 30 minutes later, they would give her Dilaudid. 30 minutes later, they would give her fentanyl.
Wow.
30 minutes later, they were back to the first one. And then sometimes they would shove Tylenol in between there.
Yeah.
And as you're watching this, I'm thinking to myself, it is incredible the amount of pain medication someone in that amount of pain that the body can tolerate. Because that is a lot. I mean, it would have killed Keith Richards.
Yeah, seriously.
And so as you're watching your loved one go through this amount of pain, it's incredibly difficult because there's not anything you can do other than hold their hand.
Yeah.
And so her doctor this sounds weird. He was very thoughtful, and he told her, you have enough donor site on your right leg that we can get all of the skin for the skin graft from your right leg. That way you will only have one leg that's scarred. Because he wanted her left leg to be normal looking.
Okay.
And then he also tried to do it from her knee up to her butt cheek, so that if she wore like board shorts or a skirt, you wouldn't see scarring on her calf.
Right. Okay.
And that's oddly comforting, because he was thinking of her future, which was cool. So when they do skin grafts, it's basically a cheese knife. Oof.
Yeah. Okay.
And then they have to run the skin through a mesher, because the skin naturally wants to shrink, and meshing it makes it not shrink.
Okay.
Here's the part that sucks even more. They cannot sew or staple the skin graft areas into their new location. They have to just sort of lay there and then everything go. So they put you in dressings and they staple the dressings to you.
Wow.
So nothing moves.
Okay.
And it's not like staples when you get stitches kind of staples. It's like the staples for the stapler that goes through 100 sheets of paper size staples. And so they took skin all on her thigh, or the back of her leg and her butt cheek. And just that whole area was just, you know, raw now, because now she's got the burned areas, yeah. But now she has these areas that, you know, with no skin. And she once again was in horrible pain. And all you could do was, there were times where my wife and I would just rotate turning and looking out the window, because we didn't want her to see us breaking down.
Yeah.
And so we just sat there, and there were times where the only thing we could do was sit in the room and not make a noise, because any sound was causing her like pain, you know, because of everything. And so that's what we did. You know, we love her, and we did whatever we could. And that first couple of days was just horrible. And then the day that they went to change her bandages, which was like 5 days later, that is apparently more painful than the actual surgery and being on fire.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for your daughter. That Man, that has just got to be brutal.
There's a lot of stuff that I now wish I never knew.
Yeah.
And it was. And then when that was happening, her vein that the IV was in blew. And that was where she was getting constant pain meds in. And then they had to stop and put a new emergency IV in her foot.
Okay.
And start over. So then she was dealing with that. And when poor girl, they brought her back. Two nurses came in. They were helping her. And she went on a rant that was so epic. Everyone on the burn unit ICU heard it.
Okay.
And she's in this amount of pain, but it was, and she's yelling, but she was so unbelievably polite to the nurses.
Okay.
That it's actually somewhat funny because she would rail for 10 minutes and then she would turn to the nurses and go, I want you to know I'm not upset with you.
Yeah.
Just the situation.
Yeah.
That she would start ranting again. And it was just funny to see her do that. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, well, I've raised a kid that's polite no matter what.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which made me feel kind of good as a parent.
Yeah.
In this odd situation that we're in. But fortunately, the next day, she actually started doing better. And when we first got there, they thought she was going to be in the hospital for at least a month. She got out 2 weeks to the day that she was in the hospital.
Okay. Yeah.
When she left, she only had one pain medication prescription because she did not want to, A, become addicted to anything.
Yeah.
And B, her goal is to, you know, sort of heal as quickly as she can physically.
That's fantastic. Seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a great kid. I'm pretty proud of her. And so she gets home. And then this is where the other sort of parts that you don't ever recognize until you're in the situation that you need things. And it's like, oh, we got to get this. We got to get this. We got to get this. Didn't know about this. You know, like she had to take like five times the amount of multivitamins. Because her body's working so hard on healing, it will leach nutrients from other parts of her body.
Okay. Interesting.
And then her doctor was like, you need to eat like 4,000 calories a day. We don't care what it is. You just have to eat the calories.
Yeah.
I wish.
Yeah, really? Yeah. If you didn't have that much pain.
Yeah. That's a lot of ice cream.
Yeah.
So physically, that's sort of what happened. Her telling the hospital, she has severe PTSD from this. She's terrified of the stove.
Okay.
But from what I understand, that is common with anybody that has gone through similar situations.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense, you know, to have that issue with the stove, especially when that was the cause of, you know, your accident that you had. And then, just in case anyone's wondering, her official count on the percentage of her body that was burned is 18%.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is, but it isn't, because now I know how they figure out the percentage. It's not your whole body total. Each limb has its own percentage, and your torso and head is its own.
Okay.
And then they figure, so like her arm is something like 40% on her right arm, and her leg is like 20% or something. But then when they add that together and some sort of math that I don't understand happens, and then that's how they come up with that number.
Okay.
And I'll just add, going forward, people that have been burned have thermoregulation issues because transplanted skin doesn't sweat naturally.
Okay.
The way that it's supposed to. The skin where they sort of connect together pulls and tugs on each other. So that causes, you know, pain. You can't get sun on it.
Wow.
Because it's bad for, you know, the skin. You have to have custom compression sleeves made because, you know, you need the extra blood flow to help everything heal.
Okay.
And fortunately, Emily already had a therapist. which was good.
Very good.
But yeah. Now she has a second one that sort of specializes in PTSD. Now that everybody kind of knows, I'll sort of talk about some of the other sort of side things where it sort of ties into your podcast.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we got there, we saw her, and I immediately thought, I have heard and seen things that are haunting me in my waking moments in the room with her.
Right, right.
And I immediately thought, I'm going to have a therapist myself.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to have to talk to somebody because I was having nightmares. And at first I had that Hollywood vision I told you about at the beginning, but then I actually knew what happened. So then my brain quit doing my Hollywood version, but then it was what actually happened.
Right.
You know, yeah. it made its own version of what happened. And that was all I would dream about when I slept. And then when I blinked, every time I blinked, it was like a Polaroid of my brain's version of her being on fire. That is very difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, there was a part where it's just her and I in the room. She has her head in my chest and she was just crying and saying over and over, I was on fire, Dad. I was on fire. I was on fire. That will haunt you.
I can imagine. Yeah. Wow.
And at the same time we're doing, kind of going through this, I had put on the Deconversion Anonymous page that I was going through this. And it was nice because on the rest of the Facebook world, it was all, oh my gosh, I'm praying for you. I'm praying prayers, prayers, prayers. And it's like, yeah, but that doesn't really, I mean, I appreciate the effort and I know why people do it as a former Christian because you feel like this is helpful. But at the same time, there was a part of me that was just like, oh my God, please stop.
Yeah.
And it was incredibly nice to have this page to go to where I could talk about what had happened, but have actual like inquiries about how she was doing and not we're praying, we're thinking about you. And,
yes.
You know, we want this to, you know, get better. And so earlier when I said how great the group is, I wasn't BSing. It's true. And it was great to have sort of that support in a non-people, you know, my favorite thing is when people type out prayers.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was nice to have this situation with people where I could talk to and not sort of be dumped on with people doing that. And now I'm going to go into another thing that is really, really, really irritating. Never, ever, ever, when someone is in an ICU situation, burn unit, ICU, or otherwise, while they are still in it, do not message them on Facebook and tell them, you know, God only gives you what he thinks you can handle.
Mm-hmm. Yikes.
A person does not want to hear that in that situation.
Yeah.
And after about the 10th message that my daughter got, she turns to me and she's like, well, if God thinks I can handle this, his opinion of me is way too damn high.
Yeah.
And I couldn't argue with her. And I, once again, I understand people are thinking that they're being helpful and giving positive words. That is not positive to somebody in that situation, that moment.
Right.
You do not want to hear that. You especially don't want to hear it if you have already deconstructed yourself, you know?
Yeah. Just to add here, like I do get the, you know, it's frustrating to hear thoughts and prayers, you know, and no action in a lot of different contexts, but it is, you know, you understand that the person is actually trying to say that they care. But when they say something like, you know, while you're suffering, God only gives you what you can bear. That is abusive, right? Like, I mean, it's, you know, it's very hurtful to the person. And so that needs to be corrected, right? Like that is wrong.
Yeah, it's sort of like that expression for comedians, you got to know your audience.
Yeah.
Or know your room.
Right.
I think she could have been the Pope and she wouldn't have wanted to have heard.
Exactly.
You know, God only gives you what you can handle.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more.
Okay.
Believe it or not, it gets a little worse. Someone messaged her and said, when you get through this, it's going to be amazing how great your testimony to Jesus is going to be for him healing you.
Ouch.
Right? Emily turns to me and she's like, if I have to be caught on fire to make you look super so you can heal me, I want nothing to do with you.
Right.
And it's sort of like you've talked about on other episodes of your podcast. Take that exact same sentence and replace Jesus with husband or father.
Mm-hmm.
Is that now comforting? You know, oh, my husband set me on fire, but imagine what it's good. But then he drove me to the ER. And once right. I'm better, it's going to be amazing to testify how great of a husband he is.
Yeah. Yeah, that the abusive or the manipulative aspect of it becomes clearer when you change the subject.
Yeah, and strange, if anything, they made Emily more atheistic, I guess.
Okay.
Because, you know, once again, that just infuriated her because she's in this situation. You definitely, the first one was bad enough. The second one, you do not want to hear.
Yeah.
And as she's saying that, once again, I think about something that has been talked about on your podcast a lot. I'm like, so somebody right now is praising Jesus because he helped them find a parking spot or their keys. But he couldn't have kept her from being on fire. So you're telling me when she was on fire, it was more important for God to help somebody find a good parking spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or their keys, right? I would much rather someone's keys be lost than not just her, anybody be on fire.
Yeah.
I've strangely become an advocate for burn survivors in the past year.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
And that was so frustrating, though, just dealing with the, you know, comments like that to her, because it's not the time. It's inappropriate. Maybe when she's home, you could maybe say something like that, or, you know, further into her journey of healing,
yeah.
maybe say something like that to her. But at the time, the only thing she wants to be in is no pain.
Right.
And the amount of pain that someone goes through when they've gone through that, it's just incredible now that I like really understand it. And I didn't even go through it. So anytime you see somebody that has burns, know that person is probably one of the badassest people you are ever going to meet, because they went through some stuff.
Yeah, seriously.
And so I guess the takeaway from this is, one, don't make candles at home. Leave it to Glade.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if anyone's wondering, as her father, I have grounded her from ever making candles again.
Okay, all right.
Not that I think she will, but you got to talk to somebody that is a professional, because you're going to be haunted. And you can get through it, no matter how difficult it seems in that moment when you're dealing with your person in pain. You do not need, you know, this clutching of the Bible or the rosary or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need that. You're what, you know, you and your family are what's going to help you get through it, not, you know, some guy in the sky.
Right, right.
Right. You can get through it. You're going to get through it. You may have to take it a minute at a time, but you can get through it. And if the person, when they're in the burn unit, trust that their nurses and doctors, all they want is to make that person better.
Yeah.
And they will do whatever they can to make that person better and get rid of pain and, you know, the pain that they're in.
Right.
And, you know, your person will get through that as well. And then if you are haunted by things, talk to somebody, a professional somebody, because they're going to know how to guide you through it, even if it's not the exact situation, but just the whole, hey, I can help you. What about this? What about this? You know, and my therapist has really been very helpful for me because I'm not having the nightmares and I don't have the Polaroid shots when I blink. And so he has been very helpful. And real quick, let me also add, sorry. When you're going through this, in a normal situation, when something bad happens, for example, when my wife's father was dying, my wife could lean on me. While I loved her father, he was not my father.
Right.
And so there's a slight difference to that. So my wife could lean on me and tell me, you know, how she was feeling, and I could be her, you know, her support and her rock in that situation. And then when my mom was dying, it was the same way thing with her. Well, in this situation, you're both going through this very traumatic situation. Mm. And so you have this thing where you don't want to tell your spouse how you're feeling because you don't want to add your trauma.
Right.
On top of their trauma at the same time, because you know they're experiencing the same trauma.
Right.
And so right. My wife's also going to a therapist.
Okay.
Just a different one than me because we...
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
We thought that might, I don't know, be weird.
One of the things we talk about is that, you know, the first time that tragedy or just life strikes you after deconversion is pretty challenging because prior to that, you were able to do something. You could pray. And that would
right.
feel like you were doing something. And obviously we can see that in the people that are, you know, writing out prayers to you on, to Emily on Facebook, right? Like they feel like they're doing something.
Right.
So personally, I want to hear what did that feel like when, you know, you might even have the impetus, you might even start to pray. Like, how did you handle that? And then two, we'll talk about counseling as an actual real alternative.
At first, it didn't necessarily bother me because I remember when I was a believer, and if I said to somebody, I am praying for you, I meant it as like compassion or,
right.
you know, being helpful. And so at first, it didn't necessarily bother me. But somewhere around day five, I was like, you know what? Instead of praying, why don't you contribute to the GoFundMe we had to set up because we have $1 million hospital bill.
Wow.
you know, okay. that is not a cheap thing to deal with. Thankfully, we have good insurance and we've been 98% happy with them.
Okay.
So that has been good. And we, you know, fortunately, we don't have to pay $1 million.
Yeah.
And so there was a point where it was like, okay, you got to say something that's actually not, I'm praying for you or I'm keeping up the prayers. And it's like, you have to, I don't know, maybe do something and put something in action.
Totally agree. I want to redirect you really quick though. The question I'm asking is for you internally.
Personally?
Yeah. For you personally, did you have a sense of, you know, did you find yourself starting to pray? How did you cope with the fact that prayer no longer feels like it's useful to you personally?
I think maybe that first night I had the urge to pray. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of in the middle of the night because that first night I only slept for like 30 minutes and then I'd have a nightmare and sure. I'd wake up. And so there was kind of a point where you're just old habits and everything, and you're just like, Jesus. But then I was like, wait a minute. I'm not praying to anybody. But it wasn't really that strong of an urge. And I think it's because I had already deconstructed when my mom passed.
Okay.
And I went sort of through it more with that than with Emily. Is that answering
the question? Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the straight line that I want to draw is that it is actually our ability to connect with another human being, whether that is your partner, if they're not also in trauma.
Right.
Or in this case, it was better to find a professional and being able to talk out the trauma that you've experienced actually is useful. It's kind of the straight line I wanted to draw.
Well, yeah, because your therapist answers you.
Yeah. This is true. Yes.
Right. You actually get thoughtful replies on, when this happens, maybe you need to redirect your brain.
Yeah.
Which was incredibly helpful. My therapist was like, when you start replaying that scene of her, crying, she was on fire, sing a song, in your head. And once you start doing that, that changes your brain and it makes you think of the song and not that. And you know what? He was right. All of his schooling paid off.
Okay. All right. And
it has been really positive to have my therapist. And now we're moving on to other things that make me tick.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
But
that's good. Yeah. That's good too. And then I think it's, abundantly clear that Facebook messages about God will make this into a great testimony is a terrible idea. But given that we understand believers and their perspective, what would you want the believers in your life to say?
I would like something more along the lines of, even if it's, I'm thinking of you, but if you're going to do something, try to do something that is more real.
Yeah,
I guess a perfect example is we have some friends that live about 45 minutes away from Colorado Springs. And one night they showed up with like 4 pizzas and some beer after we had got home.
Yeah.
That is like a real thing. And it was so nice after 5 days of going through what is just emotionally heavy to have had a night where we're talking with friends, we're eating some pizza, drinking some beer, that was a concrete thing. And I do get that we were a couple states away, so that does kind of, most of our friend base does live in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So I understand that that does make it hard, but for Emily, sending her a thing of candy was more valuable, in that time, calling the hospital and saying, hey, can you, send up a Snickers or whatever. Right. That was something that was concrete, and the people that did that, that meant more to her in that situation.
Right.
Because in her mind, it was, you are actually doing something for me and to help my mental well-being in this situation. So I hope that answered.
It did. It absolutely did. Yeah. Before we wrap up, Jack, I'd like to hear an update, where Emily is now, what are the challenges that you guys are facing today? And, what's the progress been?
So her right arm, the skin grafting has taken really well. And now if I showed you a picture, you'd be like, oh my gosh, that looks horrible. But I saw the before.
Right.
And so her arm actually looks really, really good. And her doctors think that probably in 4 or 5 years, parts of her arm will actually look like normal skin. And this is one of the things with insurance we're fighting about. There's something called laser resurfacing treatment that they do for burn patients, sort of like a tattoo removal, but it reworks the lower levels of the skin and it smooths it out and all of that.
Okay.
Insurance doesn't want to pay for it, probably because she needs 6 to 10 of them. So we're fighting with them about that. That's sort of the one thing we've been ticked off about. But her arm looks really good. Her hand and her thumb, because that was also on fire. The skin grafts there look really good. She was supposed to have physical therapy on her hand because they didn't think that she'd be able to move her hand because the skin contracts. But as soon as they unwrapped it, she started playing her Nintendo Switch, and she did it so much that she does not have to go to therapy for her hand.
I love it. I love the story. Yeah. Video games are good for something.
They're good for that.
Yeah. Okay.
Her leg looks, it hasn't healed as well. There are a couple reasons. One, because she had two types of burns, because she had the hot wax sitting on her thigh. So it kept burning, you know, down toward the bone. But then she also had the fire. So she has two types of burns. And part of what helps heal is compression sleeves. And on her arm, it's basically an off-the-shelf stock thing, and it will stay on. She's a large child. she does not use adult sizes. but they do make them custom. And so on her leg, though, when it's off the shelf, every time you walk or move, it has a tendency to sort of slide and roll.
Yeah.
And when you sleep, it'll wake up at your ankle. So the first 6-8 weeks, she didn't get the proper compression on her thigh. And when they make a custom one, in her case, it's like a one-legged pant.
Okay.
Like it's like a one-legged yoga pants. Her right leg goes down to her ankle, but there's nothing on her left leg.
Right. Got it.
And her leg has started healing better since then. You can see that it's healing. So that's something that's going to be challenging. It's going to take a long while. She's had quite the journey. She started back to work 2 hours a day, 3 days a week, but she ended up having to quit because where the skin from the skin graft on her leg and her normal skin meet, by the end of the time that she was working, because she works in retail, her leg just hurt so bad that she could barely drive home.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
And she gets exhausted easily. You know, things that before wouldn't have bothered her now, she just gets so tired. And so she's dealing with that. And obviously the PTSD, a couple weeks ago, there was a storm and they lost electricity and the battery powered lantern, the battery died, and Emily was just going to sit there in the dark because she will not light a candle or even touch a candle. Fortunately, my son was home and he said, I will light the candle. I will keep it away from you.
Yeah.
And then I will sit next to you on the couch until the power comes back on.
Yeah.
So it's just stuff like that. But I can say, as strange as her PTSD is, she has decided she is not going to let this kill her or, you know, stop her from doing anything. She would not let them throw her shirt away. As a matter of fact, she was yelling at them to not cut it off of her, that she could just take her shirt off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, no. So
we're cutting this off.
So she told, yeah, exactly. She told them to not throw it away. So they didn't. And she kept that shirt. Have you ever heard of the Japanese thing they do with broken pottery, where they put the pottery back together with melted gold?
Oh, okay. Okay.
She did that with her shirt, but instead of melted gold, she hand sewed it back with yellow thread.
Interesting. Very cool. Yeah.
And that was like her thing of saying, I am going to heal from this. And as strange as it sounds, she felt like fixing her shirt, even though she's never going to wear it again, was a part of her taking life back, I guess, in which is cool. And then she also dyed her hair fire orange because she said that she was going to make the fire her bitch.
I like Emily more and more as I hear about her.
but because she had short hair, she looked like Heat Miser from the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer things.
Okay.
And so we, as a family, we collectively spent the next week singing the Heat Miser song.
Yes.
And then, strangely, her dark sense of humor also helped her.
Yeah.
In the ICU, she started saying that maybe her new nickname should be KFC, since she was just a breast shy of being extra crispy wing, leg, and a thigh, which is morbid.
Yes. Yeah.
But funny, because it was, you know, it was showing that she was healing. She then joked that the fire cost us an arm and a leg. Not wrong.
Yeah.
She also said, anytime I have a friend from now on that has a bad breakup, I'm just going to respond every single time with, I understand. I've been burned before.
That's awesome.
And my favorite one, guys, it's a shot at us. She said, Dad, after the last 2 weeks and all of the pain that I've been in, I think I can finally understand what a man goes through when he has the flu.
Yes.
And, you know, all you could do is laugh at that.
Yeah, I am sure she's very, very tough person. So, yeah.
And so, obviously, she's still, you know, going through counseling and has some things to work out. You can't spend the rest of your life not being able to cook food. You know, you can't, mm-hmm. you can't only eat microwave food for the rest of your life. Eventually, that will become unhealthy, too. But, you know, as long as it's not 5 years from now that she can't do it, I think we're on track.
So I definitely want to just thank Emily for allowing you to tell this story. You know, I think this was really significant and important to hear for the deconstruction community, and that, again, life is going to happen. Bad things happen, and how one deals with that, I think, is really important. So thank you to Emily, and thank you to you. I want to give you an opportunity to promote some things. I think we can put the Patreon link in the show notes if people are want to do something practical to help out.
Oh, the GoFundMe, you mean?
GoFundMe.
That would be fine. It's not why I came on, but.
So we'll definitely do that. But I also know that, Jack, you've got a couple of podcasts, one of which I have been on.
Yes.
So I want to give you an opportunity to promote those.
Well, the podcast you were on is Kenyetta and Jack Save the World. Kenyetta and I talk about a lot of current affairs, but we also sort of delve into, I don't want to say a full deep dive. It's like a mid-level deep dive on topics, because it is amazing how many things happen that are happening today that if you go back, you can see the roots of it 50, 70, 100 years ago. And so we talk about stuff like that. And a lot of it is sort of like race relations related, because I'm incredibly white and Kenyetta is not.
Yeah.
But Kenyetta and I have known each other since fifth grade. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we're able to just talk about everything like that, because we've known each other more of our lives than not.
I think my comment when I was on was that, you know, your friendship is so genuine and you guys are able to get into some very, very difficult topics and lean on that friendship and communicate with each other, and in the process, help other people to really learn from that as well.
Yeah. And that's it. We both listen to what each other has to say. Mm-hmm, yeah. We're not always looking for the retort or the comeback. We're honestly listening to what the other person has to say. And we think that's kind of a big step for, I don't know, not being in the world we're in now, so to speak. And but learning the past on how things have got there, it's incredibly fascinating and it's interesting. And if I could real quick do a plug for this one, we just recorded a special 2-part episode where the first part one, we discuss blaxploitation movies from the 70s. And then we, on part two, we rate and review and discuss and talk about the 1972 hit Blackula.
Okay.
Two thumbs up, guys. I know that it was 1972. We had questions. It is worth renting on Amazon Prime.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Yeah.
So even weird stuff like that, we will go and talk about. And then my other podcast is called Musings of an ADD Mind. And because I have severe ADHD, which you may have noticed by my inability to have linear conversation or storytelling, I talk about things that interest me. And mostly season two, basically, I'm just really talking to my friends about their life stories, because I think everybody's life story is important. And we tend to focus in America on celebrity or athletes, and people tend to think that their life is more important because they're famous or whatever. And that's not the case. Every single person has important things that have happened in their life, and it's worth talking about. And I don't know, I think it's kind of cool that I have various people recorded with their life story that maybe no one would ever hear.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, obviously, that's a lot of what we do here on this podcast is just
people
tell their stories as well. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I was first drawn to your podcast, is because I like hearing people's story. And that's essentially what your podcast is, from a religious view, bent. But that's one of the things that I like about it. And so my upcoming season starts in September, and it's interviews. So yeah, and you're welcome. Right. So
thank you, Jack, so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for be willing to do something slightly different than normal.
Final thoughts on the episode. I first want to thank Emily, who is clearly the badass who ever lived. Thank you, Emily, for letting Jack tell your story. I hope your recovery process is speedy, and I want you to know that our little community is behind you. On that front, if you, the listener, want to do something practical to help out Emily and her family, the GoFundMe link will be in the show notes. Jack was being honest when he said that wasn't the reason that he came on the show. I brought it up in the mid-conversation, but if and only if you happen to have spare cash during these trying times, please consider helping out Emily and her family. I really appreciated the humor of Jack, Emily, and their family, the bit of a gallows humor, a bit of dark humor, but I really appreciated that. I feel like humor is a part of their recovery process. I hope that you took that in the right way. I appreciate Jack's heart to want to tell the story of his daughter, the pain that the parents went through watching their daughter suffer, I'm sure was tremendous. Obviously, the suffering that Emily went through, orders of magnitude worse. And again, we're thinking of Emily. I think Emily's insight of, if God thinks I can handle this much, then he has too high of an opinion of me. Anyone who has ever suffered, who has been told that God only gives them as much as they can handle, would feel that as well. Like, that is a ridiculous thing to say to someone who is hurting and in pain, literal physical pain. I also thought it was quite insightful that Jack pointed out the difference between having a therapist, a professional, as opposed to the absence of God, and actually having someone to talk things out and who responds to you is much more therapeutic. It was equally insightful to recognize that Jack and his wife couldn't rely on one another, as they were both traumatized by the experience. So, as we've said many times before on the podcast, we are very pro-therapy. if you find yourself in need, we recommend that you find a secular therapist and talk over all the issues that affect your life. I want to thank Jack for being on the podcast again. Thank you. You can find Jack's original deconversion story from several months back. We'll have links in the show notes as well. We will also have the GoFundMe link if you would like to make a practical donation. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Emily. Thank you, the Robertson family, for your incredible badassery and for telling this story, sharing with us as a community to let us come alongside and try to support you. The Secular Grace thought of the week is about empathy. The lesson of this story is that when we know someone who is hurting or suffering, telling them what makes us feel better is the wrong move. Finding out what they actually need and providing for that practical need is the right move. And that might be beer and pizza, like the friends of the family brought over. It might be showing up with that beer and pizza and walking away because they're emotionally exhausted and can't have guests. It is having enough empathy for the person and their circumstance to recognize what they actually need at the time. I truly think that when believers say horrifying things like, God will not give you more than you can bear, it is really showing their insecurity. The reason that we have deconstructed and deconverted is noticing that the promises that are built into Christianity and the Bible haven't come true, don't come true, mostly don't come true in people's lives. And when someone is literally suffering, that flies in the face of their belief system. It flies in the face of their identity. It flies in the face of what they have been promised to and forces them to look at that in a way that is deeply uncomfortable. I'm not letting them off the hook. That's still wrong. But I think much of that apologetic instinct is built into the believing culture to defend God when reality asserts itself. Secular grace is recognizing that it is the human beings that are involved that are the ones who are loving or the ones who are alleviating suffering. And even though we are finite and not able to relieve someone of the physical pain, we can be there to support them emotionally. We can support them for their practical needs. We can just be present in a way that even God is not. Think about the difference between when you were deep into the evangelical culture and how you would respond to people who were in pain and suffering around you and how you would respond today. How would that be different? Maybe you have friends, family, acquaintances who could use a visit from somebody, and that's the thing that needs to happen. Next week, we have Cooper, another Deconversion Anonymous community member who's going to tell her story. It's quite a wild ride in her words. I also have Tom Christofiak, who has written a book called Tempted to Believe. And if I were going to subtitle it, I would subtitle it How to Be a Skeptic Without Being an Asshole. I am loving the book. I can't wait to do that interview. So that'll be coming up in weeks to come. And several other community members are also lined up for interviews. So I've got a really good pipeline of interviews coming up. Until then, my name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. Time for the footnotes. The beat is called Waves from Makai Beats. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can promote it on your social media. You can subscribe to it in your favorite podcast application, and you can rate and review it on podchaser.com. You can also support the podcast by clicking on the affiliate links for books on gracefulatheist.com. If you have podcast production experience and you would like to participate with the podcast, please get in touch with me. Have you gone through a faith transition and do you need to tell your story? Reach out. If you are a creator or work in the deconstruction, deconversion, or secular humanism spaces and would like to be on the podcast, just ask. If you'd like to financially support the podcast, there's links in the show notes. To find me, you can Google Graceful Atheist, you can Google Deconversion, you can Google Secular Grace, you can send me an email, gracefulatheist@gmail.com, or you can check out the website, gracefulatheist.com. My name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. This has been the Graceful Atheist Podcast.